que yo he indicado en buen hospital general, que me sentía antiguamente de otras condiciones, porque todo lo que yo sentía es el soporte tools for us to be able to assess, analyze, and then make accommodation out of the work that has been done by both the department and the team. But then, without wasting time, let me hand over to them. Remember, because one of the things I would like you to do, so that I didn't have a chance to look at the thing is that you've made recommendations before, and it would be helpful to get the extent to which whether the department directly or the government, in whatever form, has responded to your recommendation. That I was very, very keen on. Otherwise, welcome.
Empirically, there is no consensus. 2011, we looked at two issues that might be relevant for the semester. The first concerns environmental sustainability, and the reason that the Commission looked at this issue is because of the fact that climate change gives rise to costs that impact and put a strain on public finances. So as you know, the essence of climate change manifests itself in a wide array of factors such as wide temperature variations, changes in rainfall patterns, frequent floods and droughts, and all these things have physical implications. So this research proposed some instruments to promote environmentally friendly forms of water and energy consumption and production. And I will convey the specific recommendations in the following slide. In 2011, we also looked at the financial and fiscal implications of urban land use patterns, current urban land use patterns. And what our research showed is that the current cost of our low-density urban form is around 6.4 billion rand. Put in another way, if we were to move to a more compact urban form, we would save around 6.4 billion rand. In terms of the sustainability and environmental aspect, what our research showed is that with a compact form, there would be a drop of 22% of carbon emissions emitted by all transport modes. In 2012, we looked at the industry reviewed the entire local government fiscal framework and we made various recommendations on improvements that can be made that relate to tariffs and cost restrictions of tariffs. We also looked at the important issue of repairs and maintenance, which the committee will know is a big issue at the local government level. Existing projects underway within the Commission, and which I think you would be interested in, there are two. The first one looks at assessing the impact of electricity prices, the impact of increasing electricity prices on municipalities. As you know, we as a Commission have heard many complaints from municipalities that the increases in bulk purchases are hitting them hard and squeezing their surpluses. And also the fact that the transfer of these costs are restricted due to NERSA's regulatory caps. There is the other side of the argument where there is a view that municipalities have been historically overpricing their tariffs and using the surpluses to fund a host of non-electricity items and not reinvesting that into the sector. So now that the bulk charges are increasing, that's eating into the surplus, and that's the root cause of the complaint. But we decided to undertake research to determine the actual impact of these price increases on municipalities. The second project that we're noting for the committee is that we intend looking at a more accurate costing of basic services. At present, there's very little information and research on the cost of providing your basic services, water, electricity, sanitation. The cost estimates informing national fisheries, while the best available, is very limited. So, the FFP has decided to contribute to the availability of better costing information. This will be a multi-year project. In the first year, it will focus on electricity, water, and sanitation, and in the years thereafter, the other basic services. So with respect to these two projects, we envisage tabling recommendations on the table our annual submission. Chair, then coming to the recommendations based on this work. The first three recommendations on this slide was tabled as part of our this year's annual submission, and it's based on the work that we did on repairs and maintenance. Now, when we carried out our research on repairs and maintenance, we saw a whole lot of things, budget gaps, spending gaps, but what really struck us was the limited regulatory framework that governs FFP at the local level. government's Removable Asset Management Act, at the local level, there are no such norms and standards or formal guidelines. This National Treasury has a sort of informal guideline that municipalities should spend between 8% and 10% of their operating expenditure on repairs and maintenance, but that type of practice is not in line with international best practice. So, as a first step, what the Commission is recommending is that National Treasury, in collaboration with relevant stakeholders, develop this local government-specific infrastructure asset management guideline. Also, that National Treasury devises local government infrastructure asset management technical guidelines for municipalities. There are guidelines in existence, but those were drafted in 2009. They are not updated, and they do not reflect current international best practice. And then, as you know, the funding for infrastructure at the local level comes mainly through conditional grant funding, which then places an operational burden on municipalities in terms of having to repair and maintain the infrastructure. And what we are recommending is that provincial and local authorities increase the scrutiny of the operating implications of capital funding, so as to ensure that municipalities are actually able to maintain and renew infrastructure. With respect to our evaluation of the local government fiscal framework, a number of issues came out, but of relevance to this committee is the importance of the principle of differentiation. As we know, the 278 municipalities are by no means homogenous, so it's important to recognize these differences when it comes to the provision of funding and capacity support. For example, MISA cannot provide the same support to a local secondary city as it does to a rural municipality. But to be fair, we have already seen some progress with respect to the differentiation. I mean, you've got the example of the Urban Settlements Development Grant, which recognizes the capacity of metros to plan well around infrastructure and giving them more leeway around that. But we think that more can be done. The Commission also recommended a review of the funding for capital expenditure at the local government. Our research indicates that there's underfunding of capital expenditure to the tune of 42 billion. So with respect to that aspect, the Commission recommends the government to conduct a review of the funding. And the problem is this comes in with respect to the vertical division of revenue. Operating expenditure is amply provided for, but when it comes to CapEx, this is the reason why municipalities are so dependent on conditional grants for capital funding. Then with respect to cost reflectivity, we recommend that municipalities need to ensure that their tariffs are cost reflective, but then also noting the developmental role of local government and the need to be sensitive to the indigent profile of municipalities. It's a fine balancing act because you don't want to also jeopardize affordability and non-payment. On the issue of non-payment, we did some analysis and we found that non-payment was highest in the case of electricity. So, I mean, it makes sense also when you think that water cannot be cut because it's an essential basic service. So electricity is the one where households default the most. We also recommended that municipalities who are assigned the electricity distribution function, that they be allowed to apply a surcharge on the electricity tariff, even in instances where the delegated responsibility for service delivery to ESCOM. Now, the Constitution and the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act allows for municipalities to apply surcharges. And the surcharge refers to a tax on top of the tariff charge. But what the Commission has noted is that according to the Municipal Fiscal and Power and Functions Act, National Strategy is meant to devise, is supposed to regulate that and devise norms and standards around the application of surcharges. At present, there are no such regulations. So the application of surcharges is very hazy at the moment. It's difficult to say that municipality X is applying a surcharge of X amount because there are no regulations and it varies greatly.
And how does NERS manage that?
Chair, at the moment, municipalities are saying that they do not, at the moment, apply surcharges on top of their tariffs. But if we look at past experience where we think that municipalities may be overpricing the tariffs, there could be surcharges in there. But because there's no regulation around it, it's difficult to gauge the extent to which surcharges are being applied. I've not evaluated NERS's view on that. I cannot comment on that. Then with respect to conditional grant funding, we know there are certain electricity energy related conditional grants. We recommend that transferring officers, your departments that establish these grants, that they need to ensure that comprehensive analysis of the outcomes of these grants are undertaken. In many instances, funding is allocated and spent, but we don't assess whether the intended outcomes have been achieved. But just to note for the committee that National Treasury is undertaking a review of all the government infrastructure grants. It's underway at present. The FSP is part of the technical committee that's reviewing the grant, and also my chairperson sits on the reference group that oversees that work. So all our recommendations that relate to conditional grants, we are channeling, we are trying to channel through that process. In our submission on the 2012-13 Division of Revenue, we again reiterated the need to ensure enforcement of Section 74(2) of the Municipal Systems Act, such that municipal tariffs accurately reflect the cost of providing the service. Moving on to our submission on the 2012-13 Division of Revenue related to our climate change and environmental research undertaking. And what we recommended is that government should consider providing municipalities with a performance-based conditional grant, which rewards or incentivizes actions that are environmentally efficient. We suggested specific focus areas for that type of grant, such as efficient water management practices and also efficient energy management practices, including the minimization of electricity losses, elimination of illegal connections and energy savings by households and industry, and importantly the implementation of green procurement policies. I think it's important to note that from the Commission's point of view, incentives are not just about cash rewards, but it's rather about changing behavior. So it can be a reward or a sanction. And South Africa has had experience with incentive-based grants, the EPWP and the Urban Settlement Development Grant, both have elements of incentive-type grants. But we have not fared well on these types of grants, and for two reasons really. The value of the incentive in that grant is not enough to change behavior. Also, there's a negative incentive for not meeting a criteria, you just don't get the grant and the funding. But where performance exceeds expectation, you receive the same as if you just meet the minimum requirement. So there's no real incentive for good performance. So again, the Commission is channeling this type of recommendation through National Treasury's review of conditional grants. Uh, on, the next recommendation was with respect to our research on land use patterns and the potential savings that we identified in moving to a compact urban form. We recommended that government actively and specifically pursue the development of a more spatially compact urban form by developing and adopting appropriate policies and financing instruments. We also called on government to conduct a broad-based review of the efficacy of current housing arrangements within the context of creating these sustainable and more compact, human settlements. Then, with respect to the research we carried out in 2009 on the now scrapped proposal of this, I think it's important to note that the Commission was not in favour of creating those leads, but more importantly, what we advise government is that before undertaking wide-scale and blanket-type reforms, that you first conduct a thorough examination of the different types of challenges that your different categories of municipalities are experiencing. A second visit to your metro will experience different challenges in distribution electricity as opposed to a small town or rural municipality. So we do not agree with a blanket type of approach that can even negatively affect your good performance. So it's again about that principle of differentiation. Chair, then you also invited us to...
But what was the third recommendation then?
The recommendation was that we should not pursue it, but then by the time government had responded to our recommendation, the proposal had already been scrapped, because it was scrapped in our 2010. But I mean, I think the broader recommendation around how to approach a reform of the EDI is still Chair, I'll say something around all these recommendations at the end. So now, if I could just move on to the additional issues, we'd like to present three of those issues for the Commission. The first issue is around asset management practices. And what this figure illustrates is the performance of municipalities in respect of various aspects of asset management. So, for example, your asset management planning, information systems, and those are all listed at the bottom there on the x-axis. Then, if you look at the y-axis on the right-hand side, it shows the levels of performance. So, it ranges from just general awareness of municipalities around what needs to be done to the best possible sort of performance. And what we see is that the majority of municipalities are aware of what should be happening with respect to asset management practice, but there seems to be no real implementation. A few are adopting a more systematic approach, and even fewer can be described as being as competently managing asset management. So in many cases, what we saw is that municipalities are uncertain of the extent, location, composition, physical attributes of their assets. So if this is the case, then how do they plan and budget properly for repairs and maintenance? Eventually, with respect to maintenance and renewals, and this comes from the most recent work that the Commission has conducted, what the figure shows is your budgeted amount for repairs and maintenance at an aggregate level, so that's all municipalities. That's the blue block. The red block shows actual spending on repairs and maintenance, and the green block there shows your what we should spend if we were in line with international best practice. And just to indicate that international best practice stipulates that you must spend 2% of the current replacement cost of your assets on repairs and maintenance. So it's unlike the preventive guideline that looks at the percentage of operating expenditure, this guideline looks at authorities look at what they paid for the asset and they get to a replacement cost based on that. That's not in tune with international best practice. But what this figure is trying to show is that municipalities on aggregate, they budget $16 billion for repairs and maintenance. If you compare that, to the green block, which is ideally where we want to be, then there's a budget gap of $6 billion. Then if you look at the red block, that's what we actually end up spending. So we budget $16 billion, we actually spend $12 billion. And if you compare the red block to the green block, there's a spending gap of around $10 billion. So we under budget and we underspend on repairs and maintenance. Here we also look at the renewal backlog. This one is a bit more complicated because the point at which municipalities declare backlog varies across the municipality. So we had to do some modeling, and what our modeling showed is that in the water and sanitation sector, your backlog is between $4 and $59 billion. In the electricity sector, the renewal backlog is between $8 and $41 billion. And we just went a bit further to say we had a special allocation or special project aimed at addressing the renewal backlog, and say it entails an allocation of around $4 billion.
Speaking to numbers, what do you mean by
renewal? It's about refurbishment. So repairs and maintenance is your operational expenditure where we just ensure that these things, that the infrastructure can go on. Refurbishment is where you extend the life of the asset. As I was saying, if you were to have a special project just looking at the allocation of the renewal backlog, and say that through that project we were to allocate, in addition to the annual spending of municipalities on this item, in addition to that, if we were to allocate $4 billion per annum, you see the years to eradicate columns there. That indicates how many years it would take to eradicate that backlog. So this picture does not look very, very good. Following on from that, our modeling shows that should current levels of investment continue, the under-budgeting, the underspending on the data maintenance, renewal, etc., should that performance continue, in 5 years' time, we'll see a severe deterioration in terms of the state of our electricity distribution infrastructure. What those figures show there, on the x-axis, the blue bar are your assets that are in very good condition, moving towards the right, good, fair, poor, and very poor. Now if you look at the second figure, which is 5 years' time, you'll see the big jump in the red bar. So, you know, bringing into question the sustainability of our service delivery. Now, there have been developments with respect to funding of maintenance and assistance being provided. As you would know, the local government equitable share allocation was revised this year. The equitable share is aimed at supplementing the income of municipalities and enabling them to provide three basic services. So now one of the key changes is that the local government equitable share allocation now explicitly makes provision for repairs and maintenance. Before it never, so municipalities were always lamenting the fact that they were not funded, adequately funded to pay for repairs and maintenance. Now, there is explicit provision for this. The issue, as you'll see there, is the will to use these funds for the intended purpose. Because as you know, once the local government equitable share allocation is transferred to municipality is at their discretion as to how they use it. And then we also noticed the establishment or the existence of the approach to distribution asset management, or ADAM, and that is the service delivery improvement initiative that aims at addressing maintenance and refurbishment backlogs. This initiative was established in 2008. It was established in 2008, and what we noticed just from looking at the documentation is that we know that EDI Holdings put together the ADAM business plan, and the EDI Holdings was established. But the document as it stands today, it has not been updated to reflect the current reality. If you read that document, it still refers to the REIT, and that was scrapped in 2010. So, that was just the first thing that we noticed. And then also, whilst it was established in 2008, it was only this year, the tabling of the 2013 Division of Revenue Act, that money was transferred to in the effect of this initiative. And now it's not the full initiative, it's a pilot, which is known as the Mini ADAM, and there's an allocation of $320 million going to 9 municipalities, 2 metros, namely Nelson Mandela Metropolitan Municipality and Magaon. And the basis for the selection of the municipalities that have been selected for the pilot is that these municipalities were in need of critical emergency intervention. So, Chair, what we'd like to know is with respect to this, with respect to the whole ADAM issue, is that, given the severity of the challenge, it seems that the pace of reform is exceptionally slow. Then, Chair, just on three basic services. Free basic electricity and your free basic alternative electricity funded through the LES allocation, as I mentioned earlier. The revised LES has now improved the targeting of funding in respect of the free basic services. The new LES is biased towards your lesser resource, more rural municipalities. So if you actually analyse the allocations, you'll see now that those more rural, lesser resource municipalities actually get more for implementing these interventions. Just to indicate the figures, of the entire local government equitable share allocation to municipalities, 5.7 billion rand was allocated in respect of the three basic services, particularly the energy component. And the way that figure was arrived at, it's based on a 56 rand 29 cent subsidy per household. And the bulk of that is to enable municipalities to fund operational expenditure. And there you'll see the explicit provision for repairs and maintenance. It's around 10% of the subsidy. A good development as well is that previously National Treasury used to look at the number of poor households, and that was defined as the number of poor households earning below 800 rand a month. And they used to say, okay, there's 100 of those households, they multiply the subsidy amount and you get your allocation. But now that poverty threshold has been increased to 2,300 rand, the equivalent of 2 old age pensions. So, in doing that, we've now extended coverage to 59% of poor households. And then also the previous formula distinguished between households connected to infrastructure, the grid, and those that were not. So those households that were connected to the grid would receive a bigger, municipalities with a higher number of households attached, connected to the grid, receive a bigger subsidy. But they've now removed that, and irrespective of whether you're connected or not, you get the same subsidy, which is actually good in the case of the alternative energy subsidy, because now they're getting the of the violin, paraffin, solar systems, and fire gel. And it's not a very big number of municipalities. In fact, in a number of instances, the provision is dropping. But the issue that we wanted to raise to the committee was with respect to those municipalities that make use of an indigent register and the need for better targeting. What the figure shows is your pre-basic electricity coverage against your indigents that you identify. So the red bar there shows the total number of indigents that were that exist in the municipality and that are registered as indigents. The yellow bar shows the actual amount that received free basic electricity as at 2011, and the blue bar the actual amount of indigent households receiving FBE as at 2012. What we'd like to highlight here is the case of the B4 or rural municipalities, where you see only half of the households that they identified in 2011 received free basic electricity, and that is dropping to 47% in 2012. So there is a need for intervention or assistance by the Treasury or sector department in the case of your B4 municipality. That means up to the end of the slide, but the issue that I wanted to note is the sector recommendations. Most of our recommendations are accepted, with respect to these recommendations that I presented, were accepted by government. When I say government, it's National Treasury. National Treasury starts with the responsibility of consulting with all the relevant sector departments that fall within the ambit of our recommendations, and then devising a response. So most of them have been accepted, and we've seen lots of progress, especially with respect to moving towards a more compact urban core sector. But just to note that since last year, the Treasury has taken the approach of dividing our recommendations into what they consider to be directly related to the Division of Revenue Act and those that are not. And they've chosen to only respond to those that are directly related. The view of the Commission is that the industry is empowered through an array of legislation, your IGFR Act, your FSP Act, your Money Bills, amendments, and related matters of the Teachers Act. And these all empower the Commission to not only make recommendations on the Division of Revenue, but on any other financial and fiscal matters. So the reason I raise it is because some of our recommendations are to repeat and maintenance. Our current discussion with the National Treasury, they are of the view that that recommendation is indirectly related to the Division of Revenue Act. So that type of thing will fall through the cracks because they are not being officially going to respond to it. But my chairperson asked me to indicate that we make our recommendations to Parliament, and if the committee is interested in any of those recommendations and why they are accepted or not, it could call National Treasury and the sector department involved and ask for the reasoning behind that. Thank you, Jess.
Thank you.
unfortunately, it's not clear what I when you say presentation you're referring to. The current 2013 or the past 2013 in terms of the financial year. If you could just take us through that, that would be very, very helpful. I see some of them are quite oldish. The one on the EDIS factory, and as correctly said, EDIS factory is not been taken off the radar screen, even if the rather been taken out. I know even in our plan as a committee, we did highlight the fact that we expect department to focus on structuring of the development distribution unit. That we are very, very keen on. What informed the selection of professors? What informed selection of research areas and topics? I'm just looking at the areas that you chose in the past. That would be a very helpful guide for us to look into. And you know, engagement, how has the municipalities reacted to the findings? The fact that they use only 12 billion and 16 billion has come up compared to an expected 21 billion. And what the, I know I should be asking the president, what has he ever presented to the president in the national practice of the president to current asset replacement and what has been their response on that? But for the members, one note of concern, particularly slide 18, where it shows projections of what will happen to the institution infrastructure. And we have been consistently raising that. Very, very seriously. In terms of the municipality providing alternative energy, I see as a concern drop in solar water home system. When I say solar, the solar home system was in 2010. Figure was 18, I'm sure it was 18%, and it dropped to 16 in 2011. That's a cause for concern and a great concern too. And you could share with us what the cause of that. Any questions? Now, of course, I trust you will take us through a little bit more on the east of the red. Being still part of the Arab strategy. I wish the department was here in full force so that we could know exactly what's happening on that. You know. Is there a risk when you still make reference to a practice or a concept that has been scratched and we have many others right now for 18 municipalities and management allocated to? I find it quite strange that the next reference is something that is crafted in the book. Okay, Father Nava, Honorable Reading, Master Gazin, Master Gazin, to again.
Thanks, Chair. I mean, it's always a bit depressing getting this presentation when you look at the distribution side.
see this as a problem that isn't being tackled and is just growing by the year. And I think that our approach at the moment is simply a band-aid over a wound that is just getting bigger and bigger. And I mean, I know that you can't necessarily deal with this issue. I think it requires an holistic response from government of many different departments. Because I think the issue of the grids isn't just a case of saying we've got a budget better for it, their maintenance, but it's due to kind of institutional kinds of incentives that operate at a municipal level, which I think needs to be changed in a broader scope. So, I mean, I don't think we can say that we can sort the situation out by saying that municipalities must just give more money towards the maintenance of the grid. I think we have to find a new approach to this. So, I mean, once again, but I think we've called for this as a committee a number of times, and we have not seen the department come forward with any kind of a vision for how they intend to change institutional structure so that we can get through this backlog. But it's something that has to be done. Well, what I do think, though, in terms of your research, what you can look at, I see you are undertaking a project in terms of the impact of electricity prices on municipalities. What I would implore you on this particular research, I mean, I think we're entering a very interesting era with regards to electricity prices, in that before, in an era of cheap electricity, municipalities could put a big markup on their electricity price, could cross-subsidize their other services, and probably also still invest a little bit into their grid as well to ensure that that gets up. What's happening now, though, is that with the prices increasing to such an extent, and I'm starting to see it in different places, that you are going to start to see energy-intensive users on a kind of residential level, or even a kind of commercial level, such as office blocks and that, start to take the decision to put in their own energy generation. I mean, as I said, I think yesterday I saw the Black River Park office block where they're putting the largest solar array now, and they're getting great returns on that. And so the impact that's going to have on a municipality, though, if this starts to get adopted on a large scale, is that suddenly your energy users that are over 1,000 kilowatt hours a month, which you've used that to subsidize your indigent users, suddenly that subsidy is not going to be available anymore because those people are going to drop their usage to below 1,000 kilowatt. So this is going to have a detrimental impact on the revenue base of municipalities. Now, these are all of the things that you're going to have to unpackage, I think, with this particular study. But in a way that says, well, what do municipalities do to kind of embrace the future, not to try and block these kinds of initiatives, but to actually say, well, how else can we actually spend cost-subsidize our services? This is a broad discussion that this paper, I think, needs to start to grapple with. It's a very interesting era that we're moving into, but I really do think you need to look at that. That's then also related to the issue of charges and how municipalities charge. Because if you go through it, I mean, I've seen many different reports on the different tariff structures of municipalities and what they include in that tariff and how they break it up. And it's a very complex thing, and different municipalities use different ways of doing it. I think what we do need to move towards, though, is complete transparency at the billing point as well. So people need to know what they're paying for. So they need to know, for instance, that when they're buying electricity from a municipality, it's broken down in such a way. And one of those things that needs to be broken down is the payment for the municipal grid. So there should be a kind of network charge that is put in there and that is transparently seen by every consumer. And the reason why I say that as well is because there is sometimes this perception that there's a kind of free battery in the sky. So people feel, well, we should just be able to feed into that grid and take energy back. But actually that upkeep of that grid needs to be paid for. So that network charge needs to be in there and then everyone can see that. And clearly we also need to move to time of use tariffs and all things like that. But I think let's look at how a billing system can be made more simple and more transparent, because I think people aren't always fully aware of what they're paying for, and municipalities can cover a lot of stuff up in there. Then just also the issue of the free basic alternative energy. I mean, I think this is a very interesting element. Interesting looking at your graph there, talking about what they give away in terms of alternative energy. I mean,
they give away candles and fire gel and things like that. I'm just interested as to how those municipalities actually distribute them. What kind of system do they employ? So do people just come and collect candles, or is it subsidized, or how is it done? Because I do think moving into the future, we're going to need some system that, because at the moment we give the 60 kilowatt hours of electricity and that can be done according to a meter. But if we want to give away other forms of alternative energy, what kind of system can we utilize? I mean, some people have said, for instance, we could use the MyCity bus card as a kind of credit card to do that, or maybe even a smart ID card, or how do we do that? I'm just interested, have you researched how we could actually push that forward? Then just looking at the free basic electricity, and you talk about the B4 municipalities and the fact that only that less than half their populations are actually getting access to free basic electricity. I'm just wondering to what extent that is a product of many of those households, in fact, not even being connected to the grid. And so they aren't able to get the free basic electricity because there is no connection to them. And whether, in fact, in those municipalities, we should be looking, at least in the interim, at free basic alternative energy and other ways of getting that what's entitled to them actually out to them. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to ask on your slide number slide 12, when you speak about performance-based conditional grants, what I'm just grappling with is that while there's a recommendation, would there also be a recommendation into how it monitors, how is it evaluated? Because one can recommend that certain things can be done. But how would it be monitored? How would you recommend, or what would you recommend to the government to monitor and evaluate that? Obviously, I mean, I think that's a concern for everybody about the underspend and finally the collapsing of infrastructure. Again, there's a recommendation. But what goes beyond the recommendation? Would that be part of what you would do or not part? Or do you hand over to Treasury and then say, okay, fine, we hand all this over to you. This is what we've seen. This is what we've researched. These are our recommendations. Now, just do that. I'm just wondering if there's just a little bit more that needs to be said or done in this instance. Around the alternative energy, there's certainly an increase from 2010 to 2011, and I don't know what it stands like now in 2013, in paraffin, in candles, and yet we're trying to roll out clean energy, clean alternative energy. And I just wonder just what kind of research is done around the LPG, or is it just a case of affordability? I'm just asking. I'm not asking. Around the fee-based electricity, I think a lot around that. But one of the things just around the municipalities and the possibility of losing revenue, getting less revenue as people turn to different types of energy, alternative energy. Our previous speaker spoke specifically around the whole waste management as opposed to putting up new landfills. And that would that be something that you may want to recommend in saying if you're looking at essentially getting less revenue, how do you look at raising an alternate way of making more revenue? That's a question. Thanks.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, Honorable Reagan partly covered me on slide 24, but what I still want to understand is, can you name those provinces that are providing this type of service to the
municipalities the action to our repairs and maintenance recommendations, and also the National Fishery, yes, they avoid our recommendations. As I alluded to, they may agree with it, but they don't think it's directly related to the division of revenue. SALGA, we have presented to some technical working groups, and they are in agreement with our recommendations. But my concern is just, as I mentioned, that the falling through the cracks of some of these recommendations if they're not officially responded to. With respect to the issue of rates, yes, it's not off the table. The PDI restructuring is not an issue that is off the table as yet. And the FSPA, in various of its submissions, raised this concern around outstanding policy issues and the effect that those have on municipalities. Around the time of when the rate was still on the table and municipalities were afraid that the distribution of rates be shifted, they started reducing their investments in infrastructure, for example. Because there was no clarity on whether we were going to be moving to rates or not until 2010 when it was cracked. So, as you rightly pointed out, PDI reform is still an issue that needs to be addressed despite the rates being scrapped. And from our side, we've been raising concern over this outstanding policy issue. I don't think that Adam is good enough to address the entire challenge for me and the with respect to the recommendations that are on the slide, Chair, they have all been accepted. The most progress, the ones that we've seen the most progress on are with respect to our recommendations on land use. And perhaps Sabelo can say something on that because he's our specialist. So he can elaborate on that. But that has been the one where we've seen the most progress. Touching on Honorable Kaling's comments, I think we all wholeheartedly agree that we need a holistic approach. Everything is happening in silos at the moment. You've got Adam, you've got Mesa, you've got a whole range of things that it's not really clear, are they all speaking to each other? We're pushing for issues around fossil fuel distribution, I think, but we also want to move to renewable energy sources. So there needs to be greater clarity in the system. Thank you very much for the input on what our research can also look at. I mean, that we will incorporate, and we like to get that kind of input because we want to obviously assist the committee's work. We want to do things that are relevant and that, you know, are burning issues. So we'll definitely take this back and look at ways of incorporating it into the project. We have not looked at the basic alternative energy in much detail. So I cannot comment on how exactly it gets to the minutes of the residents. But it would be an interesting area of research to take forward. And I mean, what are the innovative ways of doing that? You listed one way of doing that. The issue with the B4s, it could be that they're not connected to the grid, but they're also on the indigent register. And if you look at, okay, I don't have that data with me, but what I can do and get back to you on is, you know the diagram that shows the number of municipalities providing alternative energy. I can check whether the bulk of those municipalities are actually the B4s, because then to confirm what you're saying, the fact the reason for the only half being covered is due to alternative energy being maybe provided, or the fact that they're not connected to the grid. However, I also do think, as Chair said, there are big problems with the indigent register approach. And it's a costly approach. One of our commissioners is Steve Altitaquini, and he said that is a very costly approach. They use the broad-based approach which is, it gives everybody, irrespective of income, a certain level of free basic services. Now, the immigration register, you have to access it. You have to verify your information, so it's costly. But then again, if you're going to choose that method, you need to do it properly, because then you're choosing the incorrect tool. But the chair mentioned a case of good practice, and a number of our recommendations actually try to promote a more system of peer learning, because we don't think that that exists, particularly at the local government level, where most of the municipalities have actually used innovative ways to overcome these challenges, but it's not shared. You know, these practices are not shared. With respect to the performance-based conditional grant and how it should be evaluated and monitored, the Commission has raised so many concerns around the very evaluation and monitoring of conditional grants. We argue that it is not up to scratch. For example, we recommended that conditional grants need to undergo an independent evaluation, because as a sector, you can't give the grant and then evaluate your own performance. So we recommend that independent evaluation, because otherwise you're just continuously allocating funds and not achieving what was intended. And I mean, conditional grants are meant to implement national government priorities. So it's very important that the sector department that is responsible for the grant evaluates it according to the grant design. With respect to our recommendations, we have more often now been trying to say this is the issue, this is what needs to be done, and suggest ways of how it could be done. We've tried to shift our approach to also trying to be helpful in terms of how these things can be implemented. So, the impact on municipalities and how to raise alternative sources of revenue. Fortunately, the local government sphere has an array of revenue sources, where provinces are reliant on transfers from national, and they don't have very much own revenue sources. Municipalities are the opposite. They get the allocation from government, but they are allowed to implement an array of taxes. I mean, they could implement, for example, an airport tax, a cell phone tax, you know, that you can apply to the minister to impose a certain tax. So there are different levers that can be used to enhance the revenue. No municipalities have actually, have actually made very full use of what the legislation allows in terms of revenue enhancement and introduction of a different type of taxes. They're more reliant on the traditional sort of income flow from the tariff to property rates. So, there's probably also needs to be a shift in the way that they are approaching revenue enhancement, particularly in light of these developments. The provinces, Honourable Member, raised the provinces that provide
appears, then you do put that request to us. And then given, again, concerning our rules that we have, then we can handle that issue. Further on to... Okay, let me just go direct to the progress on the implementation of some of our recommendations. Particularly the efficient land use one. There has been some progress in the implementation. Government did assess that recommendation, and we have seen some progress in a number of areas. For example, because I work closely with the human settlements department, I mean issues around human settlements, then if you go to the health registry plan and the enhancement plan, they even set up this as one of the of their key deliverables. And then again, I think all of you remember that there is a progress at the end with the special planning and land use management bill or regulation, which is also a progress towards this issue. Okay, the other issue that I wanted to touch on alternative energy. Yes, because Sasha indicated that there are some positive developments in terms of trying to reach inequity or to address inequities that were there before in terms of allocation of funds through the LDS. But what you see that there's been that gap has been reduced now. But what is surprising is that if you look at the annual report of the Department of Energy, you will see its performance on the 9th grade to say it's not very good. Because, for example, they set their target to say they will connect about 86,000 per annum, and they only achieve about 7% of that. And I can show that it's not a pure issue of funding, lack of funding, but it also has to do with the planning, because they one of the other reasons they say the contracts with computer services providers very late. Such issues they need to be addressed within the contract system. I think those are a few issues that I just wanted to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Sasha spoke about the municipality that. To have indigenous people is very costly. During your research that you were doing, did you look at the community development workers? Did you check that what are they doing? Because that is their job. It is not the job where community development workers are the ones who are supposed to go about and look at the indigenous people and bring the register to the council. Have you looked at that?
Thank you, Honourable Member. No, we have not looked at that.
We do face sometimes is the officiality of the data that has to be used. Because officially, Service A is the one custodian with all the data, live with data, it's been faithful. There's also a danger because of opening to such, there's been some talks before within the Commission when we're using such data to say, some municipalities, because they've seen that they can maybe make discussion, but that was the question, that was discussion within the commission. To
open to abuse.
Yes,
open discussion, open to
abuse. Yes. That's why the commission, during discussion, that was worth it. Not very often in using such data, because anyway, whether it's official or not, it's a question.
Come up, thanks very much. A couple of things that would come up. But still, can you pass please by leaving you the homework, which I suppose we just said, to do it as fast as possible, because we've been directed by the figures of this to conclude this report tomorrow. We have to come and conclude as a committee this report on Tuesday with recommendations. Now, I'm still insistent. You've given us a couple of recommendations that you've given in the past, but you are not clear as to what was the response of the government on the, okay, let me be explicit now, energy-related or energy-based recommendations. It could have said something on human settlements, land use, which has an impact at the end of the day, indirect impact on consumption generally, you know, prices and things. It's a little bit, it's about to come in down there, and a little bit longish, you know, to get a response on that one. And of course, technically, whether it was National Treasury or government generally, it was responding to FSP on an area that, directly or technically outside energy. I mean, there are a couple of them that we have raised here. Such as on the commentary, I've already provoked you. But what about NERSA? Because I know NERSA, taking into account such as this, when it engages, you know, with municipalities during the MIPD process, any of them, you know, that sort of thing, you know, the cost effectiveness, very, very interesting is cost criteria, because that's the language that the ESCOM is using a lot. And ESCOM has been very insistent on that today. People, how far are we from being cost-reflective? Of course, being sensitive as well, just as ESCOM, to say the balance is with the indigenous, the, you know, perspective, you know, in the problem of energy in all respects. So please help us in this. I mean, be very factual, and if no response has been done, that's it. But the response we'd like to get as well is multifaceted. It's one thing if the government would say yes to acknowledge this need to address, but it's another thing to have acted on it. Please make us a safe knowledge, assess and work on it, then direct it to the sector department. Thereafter, the sector department, which is energy in this respect, or public enterprise or ESCOM or whatever, did respond in this way, partially or fully. Just do a matrix, you know. Then after that matrix, maybe we can make a follow up. But remember, we want this information to influence us to make a recommendation. Because this process, which we are concluding in terms of today, you know, it culminates into us making recommendations, and our recommendations must be based on findings. And you're part of that array of decisions that help us to, combine our findings, and which are factual, obviously. So, it will just help us in that respect. And thanks for raising the issue of, that we are open to us. Making recommendations for such areas. It just means that you're upping the scale now, as a priest, more and more possible. But you learn with us, Sanetti just before you was also talking about those constraints, but you can also be quite innovative as to how you can do that. All you need is to have an entity taking up certain things. Talking a lot about it, but I like saying we have to build, we can't afford fine, coming up with a very, very substantial report, which will be completed next week. All I can say is that what I sense is that the speaker is very, very alert and keen to show that we do our best in assessing. I can see once again, please, if you have a chance, in fact, I'm asking you to throw yourself into making this matrix this afternoon so that we can have tomorrow and you, because once again, Auditor General, CME, we use you as tools to test the department and its entity on issues that you are supposed to have done. And your work is quite well. Honourable members, thanks very much for today. See you next week, Tuesday. The meeting stands at hand.
Okay, thank you.